have a different voice. I choose to live free, and you disagree with that choice. I will stand in the light. You're under my skin, but I don't have to let you in. I won't put up a fight, but that don't mean I let you win. I will stand, I will stand in the wrong and the right. I'll take a deep breath and I'll take the next step in my life. I will stand, I will stand, I will stand, I will stand in the light. You tear at my heart, the seeds have been sown, but I'll stand on my own.
I Will Stand by Tanya Joy, and it's the title track on her brand new EP. I Will Stand was co-written with Ingrid McDonald and features background vocals by Ingrid, Avroz, a.k.a. Joanna Muhammad, Hills Kirkutis, and Tanya Joy herself. Tanya just happens to be my very special guest this week. My name is Stuart McKee, and this is Musicians FAQ. All right, my very special guest this week on Musicians FAQ is OMA-nominated singer-songwriter Tanya Joy. This celebrated Canadian folk roots musician has been honing her craft as a songwriter over the past several years and is about to release a brand new EP called I Will Stand. The songs on this EP are honest and heartfelt, tackling the complicated issues of personal relationships as well as the complicated issues of world relationships and the many issues that are facing us today, including racism. All right, my guest this week on Musicians FAQ is Tanya Joy. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well, I mean, it's great to have you here for two reasons. First of all, we're friends. We know each other. We've written a couple songs together. And second of all, because I'm just a big fan. So as I always like to do with these interviews, I want to kind of, for the benefit of people tuning in who may not know anything about you at all, and then for benefit of people like myself who want to get to know you a little bit more, we'll go back right to the beginning and talk about where you were born, where you grew up, and what your childhood was like.
Okay. I grew up in Markham, born at Scarborough General, spent most of my, you know, adolescent years in Markham. I have three siblings, two sisters and a brother. And, you know, growing up was sports and just kind of school and sports and lifelong friendships building there. And it was a pretty happy household. I have some siblings that achieved a lot in gymnastics, and we were just very supportive of one another. Yeah, it was a great, great little family unit.
Right. And what about music? Was there music in the household?
Music was always in the household, in terms of, like, I'm Jamaican Canadian, and my family always had music going. We always had a lot of people over or went to a lot of picnics, and music was always a mainstay, but more not the traditional music that, you know, Canadians are used to hearing, or, you know, in the UK influence of like the Beatles and Rolling Stones. You know, my parents used to listen to that when they were younger as well, but we mostly listened to Caribbean music like Bob Marley and Burris Hammond and things like that in the household. So there was always, you know, dancing. We're very kind of loud and jovial family, so gatherings were always pretty rowdy.
Sounds like fun. I wish I could have been there. So what got, was there anybody actually playing music, or just, is it listening to music? Are there any musicians in the family?
There are no musicians in the immediate family. I do have some extended family that have gone on to do some music, but I would say like music came to me pretty late. My sister actually had more of a connection to music and, you know, was always kind of experimenting and collecting different types of music more so than I was. I remember like recording stuff on cassette tapes from the radio, just like top 40 stuff. But yeah, music came later. So it's not necessarily an influence directly from the family.
Okay. So what was the trigger with music? What sort of finally sat you down and said, hey, I want to start playing music? Was it playing an instrument first? Was it writing poetry or lyrics, or was it singing, or a combination?
Well, I was kind of inspired by a few friends that played music. They played guitar. I lived in Ottawa for a while. And, you know, when we'd gather with some friends, a few people would bring out the guitar and start kind of the jam circle. And on a particular cottage trip with a couple of girlfriends, the guitar came out. And I thought, I'd love to play one day, just learn guitar. And then a little bit later, I did purchase one, and then, you know, life goes on, and I sort of self-taught, you know, myself to play guitar for a while. And yeah, and then, you know, I was just basically promised myself that I'd find a good time to actually take lessons and get into it that way. So that was sort of the beginning of it. And more and more I was interested in particular artists. I think when I started working in the graphic design field and working in agencies, I was influenced by the music that I would hear. We played music a lot in those agency setting. And we, you know, trade, play, you know, what are you listening to? And I kind of got to catch up on the music that I didn't listen to from years back from some of my colleagues. So that stuff started to form like a basis for my interests moving forward in music.
Nice, nice. Now, is there a particular song that inspired you to suddenly say, I want to become a songwriter? Or a certain artist or anybody?
Well, I'd say an artist, not necessarily a song. I my sister introduced me to Ray LaMontagne, a U.S. and American folk artist, and I kind of got really in tuned with his music and the way he writes and his style and you know, the musicality of it. And I was sort of obsessed listening to his songs and going into the back catalog and finding similar music like Amos Lee and really that, I would say, was the artist that inspired me to start writing down some feelings. And I think I started a bit with poetry as well, but then started leaning towards songwriting when my life was going through like a dark period, a challenging time when I was just trying to work through some stuff. And that's actually when I started taking guitar lessons too. So that all kind of started to come together. I initially just wanted to take less guitar lessons, and the school that I was going to got me to take vocals as well, which was never my intention. But yeah, it just started all to come together. And that was a time for me where in a relationship that I was in, I had sort of stepped back from my identity a bit. I was sort of changing myself for the relationship. So I got lost in that. And music was the thing that brought me back to myself and who I am, and like the way I existed in the world before, like my outgoing nature and reconnecting with friends. I think I had just completely pulled back from my community and stuff. So,
right. Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yes. I think I remember.
That you play?
It isn't. Actually, there's two, and I can't remember which came first. There's one that I'm thinking of that didn't, you know, it didn't kind of play it out much because I never really got it to a place that I liked. But then there's another one. It's actually became the title track for my first EP in 2013, and it's called "I'll Be Around." So that was the one finished song that I was pretty proud of, right? I would say.
Now, I know you and I have both taken some songwriting workshops, and we've co-written together, and there's a lot of, you know, sort of people have their ideas about how to write songs, and everybody's got their own style. Does the lyric come first? Does the title come first? Or do you just sit down with some ideas and you just want to get some things out, or you pick up the guitar and that inspires you? How does a song come together for you?
I mean, these days it can come either form, music or lyrics first, but definitely I started out with lyrics first, having a lot, you know, trying to formulate my feelings or ideas on paper, especially because, you know, my guitar skills needed to catch up back then. So I've often been lyrically driven, and then the music, I still feel like I'm always trying to work on new melodies and challenge myself to find different chord structures and stuff. So yeah, lyrics first, for the most part. But then, you know, in co-writes, I feel like that's my strength when I co-write, and I learn always from the people I'm writing with and on the music side and lyrically as well.
Yeah, no, I love your lyrics for sure. And I know when we've co-written, you know, I'll have sort of an idea about a melody line or a lyric idea, and then all of a sudden you came up with something just absolutely fantastic that I wouldn't have even thought about. And on that note, I do have a song that I'm working on. Just the other day, I said to my wife, I said, I'm going to have to pitch this one to Tanya to get her to polish up the lyrics.
awesome.
But so now, did singing come along with that right away? I mean, obviously you're singing as you're kind of writing the song and kind of figuring the song out, but did you always have the intention that you would sing your own songs? As right. part of kind of being your own person and finding your own voice and identity?
Yeah, I think once I started writing songs, and as I said, I went, you know, I started taking guitar lessons and the vocals came with it. Well, the vocals progressed faster. The vocals and the lyrics progressed faster than the guitar playing. So, and I mean, what I'm trained in my career is as a graphic designer. So I spend most of my energy in that world, communicating, helping other people communicate and, you know, bring their messages to life. And I felt like, I think when you bring up that question, it's like music for me became the opportunity to express my own self and my voice. So once it was all coming together, that's the avenue that I felt I could express myself more in.
colors, my tears have blown dry, and my love, like the tide, has gone out. Well, there once flowed a river, how I long to forgive her, the silent killer. Strike, and I'm locked out. And when there's nothing left to prove, I keep holding back the truth. The damn fool.
The Drought by Tanya Joy.
Because I have a background in art, you know, drawing, painting, etc. And I never felt like I drew realism and painted realism more than like a abstract piece or something that needs to tell a story. And for whatever reason, I never used art to express myself. So I feel like I've just found a new medium when it all came together. I was finding a new medium that could actually express deeper thoughts and challenges and stories that I wanted to tell.
Right. Yeah, beautiful. So now, did some of those childhood influences musically, the Jamaican music, Caribbean music, did some of those things start to find their way into the music you're doing today? Or youth, is it more kind of the folk, like sort of North American folk music that you're more stylist?
I think that it's in there subtly, it's not overly influencing the material in the last couple of albums, but there has, you know, on the first EP, there was a more of a reggae tune that we turned out. But I think it's a subtle in terms of like the soul that comes across in the way I deliver songs, or the emotional, like roots rock kind of vibes. But it's not I'm not deliberately trying to bring that influence into the music.
Right, right. So when was the first time you actually sang in front of somebody? Do you remember that moment?
Well, I remember it for karaoke when I was in university.
Was alcohol involved?
Oh yeah, definitely. I lived with a couple of girls who were in like music, taking music therapy. So they were, you know, they were avid singers and they played different instruments, and they got me up one night playing karaoke, singing karaoke. That was a riot, but still, that was a long time ago. I still didn't have any, you know, aspirations to sing and play. But if you're talking about with my guitar, when my guitar coach had introduced me to an open mic community where I was living at the time in Stouffville, and encouraged me to go out and check it out. And so I did that and hung out with them for a few weekends and just like watched and listened, and then eventually got up the nerve to play and sing. And so that's probably what led me a few years later to start hosting my own open mic in Uxbridge, which I've hosted for the last 10 years.
Oh, that's great. Now, are you comfortable with your own voice? A lot of singers aren't.
I think I'm very comfortable. Yeah. I've grown, I've definitely evolved. I've taken training, you know. I think it's essential to work on techniques, and I've gained a lot of knowledge, and my voice has my range has progressed, and my intention and my control of my voice has increased. So I'm very happy. I can be very intentional with my voice, and I'm very happy with it these days. Yeah.
Good, good. I mean, I love your voice. I love the tone of your voice. I think there's a real soul and honesty and authenticness with your voice too. And just a vibe there. But, you know, it's an interesting thing for me. I'm still kind of growing into that and getting more comfortable. Do you find that when you're songwriting that you're switching keys around or tempos around, or do you find you've got a band as well that you've played with, right?
Yeah, that's right. I play in a trio where we each sing harmony and all different instruments, and we sing each other's songs and some covers. And then I have a band that backs up my material for Tanya Joy, and some of those people, you know, are interchangeable in both of those projects.
Well, I guess what I was leading to, I'm just kind of curious, when you have a song, like, is this, you know, do you identify that this is going to be a Tanya Joy song, or this could be part of the trio, or this one needs to be a band, or this one I can do solo acoustically?
Yeah, that has started to happen for sure. I think, especially with co-writes, sometimes I feel like, and I've written with some of my band members, you know, as the songs come out, because I write in different styles a lot, and I know you do too. And so sometimes they feel natively, you know, that they belong to me and my voice. And sometimes they do lend themselves to another project, or, you know, potentially something to pitch to other artists or for somebody else to take on for sync or something like that. But lately I've been doing a lot of writing, you know, during the pandemic as well, co-writes and such. And, you know, just trying to push myself and see what else is out there beyond the material for me. But I've also intentionally written some songs for the new album. So a few of the songs on the new album are from co-writes and that were written this year.
Nice. Now, as far as working and singing and playing with other musicians, did that happen sort of through the open mics and things like that?
Yeah, I think it happened very organically. Over time, I've known the players that I play with for over 10 years. And I think, you know, we each came to open mics, for example, or, you know, we found each other through other music friends, and we've supported and listened to each other's material and encouraged each other along, and eventually realized that we have a lot of commonality and a lot of interest in the same type of music to come together and support one another in other ways. So I think organically we've all grown and we've just found each other in a nice way.
Nice. Now, I know you've done a lot of collaboration, and you and Ingrid did a show together on a on a Zoom virtual concert this year as well. Do you enjoy playing? Is one more personal for you than the other, or more important for you than the other? Do you enjoy playing with a band or with other people, or do you enjoy playing acoustically on your own more?
Right. I definitely I enjoy playing to an audience, playing live versus virtual, because of that connection. One of the main things that I get out of playing music and writing music is to create that connection with my audience or with people, like even on a one-on-one basis, and sort of, you know, create a space for us to both be vulnerable or, you know, influence or support one another through music. So whether that's playing solo or playing with the band, I have done a lot more solo over the years, but I'd love, you know, to experiment more with that and as a band and see if we can still create that connection, you know, where you never really know the impact that you have on people when you bring music to them. You know, we all are related, and I think music is the best way to establish that connection. And in a world where it's always trying to trip us up and create adversity between us, I think music is that great healer and that great connector. And I think that's what I use it for, because I love people. I love meeting people. And I'm fascinated by people. And I think music is sort of my gateway to that, you know, gateway to connecting with others.
Right. Now, how do you feel about when you're co-writing with somebody, or when you're playing your song with a band, or somebody does another arrangement of your song? Are you pretty protective about, you know, the song? Are you willing to kind of go wherever they're willing to go?
I mean, I'm very open. I'm always curious to hear, you know, what other people hear. So, it's for someone to cover one of my songs, first of all, is like a great, you know, it's a great compliment. And so I have heard some of different versions, and I feel like I learned something, or again, it's like, yeah, it's just refreshing. So, and I feel like I'm always learning and growing. So I know I don't have all the answers. There's not one way to deliver a song. So, you know, when somebody switches it up, it could have a different impact on somebody else. Or you, just like when you hear songs covered on the radio, you could really hear them for the first time because of a different way in which somebody changed the arrangement or the tempo or what have you. So yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah. Your guitar player, I think your guitar player from the trio did a version of Blink.
He plays guitar and percussion, and yeah, he's a great singer too. So he did a cover of Blink, and that I didn't know he was gonna do it. He did it I think during the pandemic, and recorded it, and it was great. Like he changed a couple of notes and he slowed it. No, I don't even know that he slowed it down, but he just brought his own flavor to it.
Yeah.
And the delivery, you know, and the way he phrased it, really, yeah, I thought it was quite beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a powerful song. And I mean, I've heard it both ways. I mean, I think emotionally when you sing it, it really hits and it resonates maybe more with me. But musically, I really liked his arrangement. Like I think the chord progression really stood out more for that song, because it's an interesting chord progression. I mean, it's not overly complicated, but it's just the way that you build the chords. And I think with his arrangement, it really hit me harder. I realized, well, that's a great little progression that she's got going in that song.
And so let him know.
Yeah, it's kind of a treat to hear both versions.
Right. And I co-wrote that song with James Linderman, who also had a big impact on the chord progression as well. So
think I can't erase this memory of you, as if we too, as if sad was something so new. Blink, no, the time won't soften the blow. The years keep taking their toll, and what was stolen will never grow old. In the blink of an eye, change your life. In the blink of an eye, I can change your life. Your life. Blink as if this was never your thing. A mirage constantly leaving. It's
Tanya Joy, another song off of her new EP, I Will Stand. Blink was co-written with James Linderman.
So now you've got a new EP coming out next week. We're just talking about this actually a week from today. I Will Stand is the name of the EP. You've got 7 songs on there. Is there a big party live performance release or a series of kind of shows that you've got planned out solo and with your band? Or
that's right. Okay, so yes, the album comes out on September 16th. On September 17th, we're having an EP launch party at my local brewery in Uxbridge, the Second Wedge. So it's going to be full band. And we have a Gravely James, a familiar name to you, I'm sure, opening up for us. So I'm very excited about that. And then there are a few other show opportunities coming up in the fall, maybe one. I'm just finalizing for September, definitely one on December the 11th at the Biltmore Theater in Oshawa. So nice. I'm hoping to play some more with the band. Of course, you know, as long as everything goes okay with the COVID and the state of the world, we'll be good.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, I mean, I want to get up and see you play as well. So I'm hoping at least we, you know, at least until the end of this year, we were able to, you know, get out and see people. And
that's right. Ingrid, I think Ingrid McDonald, who we've both written with and are friends with, she's going to try and make it out. And yeah, it'll be so great to see other collaborators and friends who've been involved in this album come to the show, and I'm just looking forward to playing.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it too. Now you co-produced this record with Hills Kirkoudis, right?
Yes, Hill Kirkoudis was the producer and engineer and mixer on this album. She's also a multi-instrumentalist, so she had a huge impact on the end result, and it was such a pleasure to work with her. I think we did everything remotely during the pandemic. We've been on this project for about a year. We met during Song Studio, which is a week-long songwriters workshop that we've both attended, you and I, Stuart. And it was a dream match. She was wonderful to work with, and I'm really excited for everybody to hear what we came up with.
Yeah, that's great. And I know, I've been watching sort of the progression of the different releases of singles over the last bunch of months, and you've gotten on playlists and you've been played on different radio shows and internet music shows. I mean, there's so many different formats. It's hard for me to even keep up with, but each week I'm kind of saying, somebody's interviewing you and somebody's playing your song, and that's gotta be pretty exciting.
Oh, it is for sure. Yeah. It's new territory for me, and just trying to have a small impact I'm very grateful for the attention that the music is getting. And I really hope that the songs reach the people that it's intended to reach, and they tell two friends and they tell two friends. It's been such a fun ride. There's a lot that goes into it behind the scenes, but it's worth it. And I'm just trying to enjoy each step, because it can feel overwhelming, but I'm just grateful, and there's been a lot of encouragement, so I'm pleased with that.
And then you had the OMA, was it the OMA Awards, the Durham?
The Oshawa Music Awards, which is basically celebrates all the music in the Durham region. I got to host. This was awesome. I got to host the nominee announcement out of the Biltmore Theater in Oshawa, and it turned out that I was nominated for two awards, for Songwriter of the Year and Durham Song of the Year. So that was pretty awesome surprise. I was a bit like caught off guard, but I'm very excited about that.
Yeah,
nice to be recognized.
It is indeed, and well-deserved. Now, you had a song, Planks and Marietta, which you talked about some of that when you got into songwriting, and it was really maybe more expressing yourself and dealing with your own situations and helping you through things. But this was something that was certainly affected you personally, but it wasn't an incident that happened to you personally. It was,
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, Planks and Marietta is the name of two cross streets in my hometown where I live in Uxbridge. And there had been some graffiti and kind of written on the roads and the signs and defacing of mailboxes and a free library that was destroyed. And this had happened the summer of 2020, which was shortly after George Floyd had been murdered. Those two things kind of crashed up against each other for me. I was still reeling from the death of George Floyd and the aftermath of that, but I hadn't really found a way to express my feelings. I just sort of went dark, because it was, even though it's nothing that happened to me specifically, it did affect me and my family and the Black community. So I was really trying to figure out how to respond to that in my own way. When I learned of the incident that happened in Uxbridge, it sort of personalized it for me. And at the time, or a little bit later on, I sort of sat with that for a while. I took a songwriting course, with Hillside Music Festival. They did a Girls and Guitars program, and we were encouraged to write a song, that was personal to us. And that was, you know, something that we were a little challenged to get up the courage to write. And as soon as, you know, that opportunity presented itself, I realized that that was the song that I really wanted to write. And that was the way that I could bring some of my personal relationship to racism, which is something that I haven't really talked about much in my life, and dealt with like on a public scale. It was a way for me to address and confront that, and to confront my community that I love very much. But, you know, I felt like it wasn't, the coverage of it was very quiet. And I felt like there must be many other towns like this where these things happen. You know, everybody says, oh, it's only happens in the US or in bigger cities. And I felt like this was an opportunity to highlight that this does exist. It does impact us. And I wanted to sort of call attention to it and, you know, call out to the community to help make change happen. So I was really pleased with the results. It came out of nowhere, in a sense. Like the moment came and I rose to that, I guess. And working with Hillside, the Girls in Guitars course, we were really able to articulate, and it helped me articulate, you know, the feelings and the story so that people could understand what had happened as well. And then I released it the very next month with the guidance and the support of Hill's beautiful production skills. I wanted to release it for Black History Month, and I donated, and I'm still donating, the proceeds from the sale of that song on Bandcamp to Black Lives Matter. So it all just, it sort of came together, and I felt, you know, everything in its time, and that time came.
Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been a calling internationally last couple of years, maybe more than there has been in quite a while, and rightfully so. The people are becoming maybe more aware, and maybe they should have been all along, and maybe they were, but they just didn't know how to take that and put action to it. So, I mean, it's great to have those things happening. You know, and it's interesting. I mean, I'm coming up on 60, and I certainly seen racism in Canada, and I always thought it was interesting that a lot of people do think that, oh no, we're different here, and but it's not. And you know, as you're talking, it reminded me of a story that was going around in our area last year. A lot of the small towns around here, somebody was going around putting up signs saying White Lives Matter, and there was a little fanatical little group. But what was nice is that all these communities were coming together and taking a stand against it and going down and taking down the posters and making mm-hmm. their voices known and you know, getting the news involved and things like that. So people weren't just letting this sort of silently creep into their communities. They were pushing back on it and saying, no, we're not going to accept that here, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, in my community as well, after the death of George Floyd, there were certainly some community members who, you know, put together a peaceful stand-in, as you're saying, like they found ways to raise their voices and you know, amplify the issues and try to stand in solidarity with the Black community. And so that's also amazing to see, and to acknowledge that that's happening. There's a lot of work to be done in all the small places and in all the quiet corners as well, though. So, you know, I'm happy to have just contributed to the dialogue, and I hope that sparks. I know it already has. I've had some conversations with community members just to talk through it. People who are shocked or people in denial. It's interesting, and I felt good that, you know, that at least a conversation could have started that otherwise wouldn't have. So right. It's baby steps, but and a long road, but you know, we're here for the long haul. So yeah, so we'll see what we can make of it.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly the indigenous community and the Muslim communities, and then
the Asian I mean, community, yeah.
You know, LGBTQ and everybody has certainly had their share of sort of
atrocities,
atrocities, bigotries, you know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's so, yeah, I mean, I think the time is just to move forward, and we've got an election just around the corner, so I mean, good time to make our voices heard. Certainly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to read something as you're talking about Hillside and Planks and Marietta, and Marie Zimmerman, the executive director of Hillside Festival, in reference to the song Planks and Marietta, had quite a lot to say. I had chills over and over as I listened. It's such artistry and its storytelling, its heartbreaking reserve and emotional strain, tension that runs through it. Artists have a special kind of bravery that's linked with telling the truth. In this case, Tanya rescues a moment in history from obscurity or suppression and asks us to contemplate it wider, asks us to contemplate its wider relevance to the community, to Blacks elsewhere, and to the world, as she tenderly explores the disjunction between appearance and reality. I find the song unaccountably moving. It's an incredible review, and then that's gonna mean something.
Oh, absolutely. That's it's very meaningful to have, you know, heard those words from Marie, and to hear the impact that it had on her. And I'm sort of just overwhelmed with gratitude for, you know, for her support and her acknowledgement of what the song made her feel, and that's encouraging in so many ways to continue to give it life and put it out there in the world. I would say, like Marie and Doris, who headed up the chorus, were very instrumental in pushing the song forward to really get to the heart of what I needed to say and what happened and the impact. So, you know, it's sometimes as songwriters, it's easy to sort of gloss over and say, oh, you know what I mean. And, you know, so I think that the support of that chorus and what they're doing for women, that chorus is all about challenging the gender imbalance in the music industry for people who identify as female, and creating a platform and a support system to encourage the songs to be written that need to be written that are don't get written in certain rooms, and create a platform for those songs to be heard. So, I mean, I'm fully on board with that idea and that platform and that opportunity. And for Marie and Doris to keep doing that year after year is incredible. And to see the results of some of the artists that have come out of that is fantastic. So, I'm just grateful to be part of that. I was lucky to do it over Zoom, long distance from Uxbridge to Guelph because of the pandemic. So, the pandemic has been an interesting experience for everyone. I think some good things come out of it, but obviously some challenges and highlighting, you know, the issues that we face as a community, as a country.
It's really about grateful. Moments. It's moments in time, isn't it? I mean, this is, you know, what's happened over the last year or two, or what's going to happen over the next year or two, really will kind of determine future for a lot of the world and really define us and, you know, who we want to be it's incredible how these things come together. It's almost like, you know, there's a giant pause button that was put on the world to say, you know, stop and look around. I mean, certainly I know a lot of Black leaders had questioned, you know, why now? Why is it? I mean, these things that have happened with George Floyd, they've been happening constantly. I mean, I've certainly seen them on the news over the years and been, you know, just crushed by it and had conversations about it. But why was that moment so monumental? And I guess because everybody was at home and everybody was on social media and everybody was on TV. And, you know, it's almost like there's greater forces that were kind of working to kind of say, okay, enough.
It was filmed. So there was no doubt to what happened, you know, to, and it's, you know, I couldn't watch. I couldn't watch the full 8 minutes. But yeah.
I think more disturbing has been sort of the backlash, you know, from the other side where people are still in denial and
yeah,
you
know. It's interesting to see the world that we're really living in. So, yeah. You know, so that we can really have the conversations that need to be had, because all of that has been going on underground in a way and in those corners. So we'll just have to move forward from here in a, you know, enlightened state. We know what the job really is to do for all the communities that have been marginalized.
I see white picket fences and pink lemonade. Street signs and headlines that won't change a thing. My heart is heavy with shallow breathing. A black life shattered for all the world to see.
Planks and Marietta by Tanya Joy, an important song with a powerful message and meaning, available now on Bandcamp with proceeds going to Black Lives Matter.
Do you find that that's given you deeper purpose and deeper meaning? I mean, you know, I think you're certainly one of the artists who's right for this moment in time.
Mm. I think it's all coming together at a time when I'm ready to really step into my voice and my purpose, my bigger purpose. So that's a fortunate happenstance that during this time that I was able to continue writing and producing this record with Hill, all of these big moments and these big issues that I have a stake in and a voice and an opinion about are also happening around me. So I felt like it was a call for me to rise too, and to, after, you know, lots of introspection during this time and, you know, where I've been and where I want to go, I think it's serendipitous, in many ways that all of it came together at a time that I'm just ready to own my voice and what I have to say and who I want to stand up for, and the impact I want to have with my music and with people as a community. So it just really brought everything into sharp focus, like real clarity, which, I hope I can do justice. You know, I hope I'm responsible with that, you know, with that task we'll see what comes in the future, but I'm really pleased to have this moment to explore and the support that I've been given and the community that I have around me to work with. It's a unique time and I'm grateful. Once again, I think that's the theme. I'm grateful for all these opportunities.
We're grateful for you and your music. Certainly an important point in time, and certainly an important artist. Tanya Joy, it's been so much fun talking with you today. Before we wrap things up, maybe give you a chance to talk about what else is going on, your socials, any videos coming out to support the new EP.
Okay. So we have the CD release party happening September the 17th. The release of the album is September 16th. There will be a video coming out early October to support I Will Stand, which is the lead single off of the EP, written with Ingrid McDonald, who also sings background vocals as well as Afros and Hill Kukutis. And the results of the Oshawa Music Awards are happening October the 23rd, or sorry, September the 23rd. So we'll find out, you know, there's a lot of talent in Durham. The competition is fierce, but I'm hopeful, and we'll find out the results of those awards and that competition, I guess. So that award show in a few weeks. I think that's all I have to report at this point.
Well, you got my vote. And it's TanyaJoy.com for your website?
That's right. So TanyaJoy.com or at Miss Tanya Joy to find me on Instagram. You can also sign up for my newsletter, and where I'll be sharing more goodies and details. I'm doing a giveaway for those who come to the CD release party and who will help support me and push this album through and share it out to a wider audience. And I do hope to have more shows listed for the fall, so that we can all see each other and connect and we get to experience that live music vibe together. It's been so long, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Hi, this is Tanya Joy, and you are listening to Musicians FAQ with Stuart McKee on CKMS Radio Waterloo 102.7 FM.
When you find you lost your way, and you're standing all alone.